Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shot, the Spectator's political podcast. I'm Lara Prendergast and I'm now joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. So we've reached the fourth round of the Brexit negotiations and this morning David Davis and Michael Barnier have done a press conference. So James, what did we learn?
Well, the tone at this press conference was much more emollient than it has been at previous ones. You know, Barnier talked about a more constructive atmosphere after the Florence talks, but he also suggested that when the European Council meets later on in October, they are unlikely to declare that there's been sufficient progress to move on to trade talks. So the tone is definitely, the mood music is definitely better, but I don't think there's going to be that much progress. And I don't think the UK is going to get on to talking about trade with the EU until the new year.
So Katie, do you think Theresa May's speech in Florence paid off?
Yeah, I mean, as James says, it's not like we're getting what we want straight away, but there was definitely a better tone. And I think Barnier credited the speech and said it had kind of introduced a new dynamic to the talks. And there was definitely a much more positive attitude. But you can also see a slightly different approach from the British side, because I think David Davis has been there the entire time. He hasn't done a drop-in, drop-out with the negotiations as with previous ones. And there does seem to be that both sides are working in a more constructive fashion. But that said, we're not getting to the place that the British government want to be on talking trade. And there's no suggestion that will be after the next round. It's still very much, you know, summer in the distance and up to Brussels.
Yeah, I think this is, the time obviously is one of the things that's on the EU side. And it is in their interest to run the clock down a bit further, eke a few more concessions out of the UK. And I mean, I think the EU's view on the Florence speech is, we've put the pressure on and, you know, here they've come up, they've given ground on some things, which the UK undoubtedly has. So I think it all remains to be seen what that happens and how many more concessions there are. The thing that surprised me was this suggestion that they're getting somewhere on the Irish border question, which I don't really see how you can get anywhere on the Irish border question until you know what the future relationship between the EU and the UK is going to be.
Talking of Theresa May, she's also today said that the problem with the election was that the Tories weren't ready. James, what should we make of that?
I think this is an interview that is going to make Tory MPs put their heads in their hands. She basically says that the problem with calling a snap election was that CCHQ wasn't ready for a snap election.
Even though she called
yes,
a snap election.
Which is how on earth they managed to be taken by surprise by an election they called themselves. Now, this is one of the snap election is one of those classic examples of how a politician's strength can become their weakness. Everyone used to say that one of the strengths of Theresa May and her team before the election was that they were incredibly tight, it didn't leak, they kept everything to themselves. But they kept everything to themselves to such an extent that the people down the road at CCHQ had no idea they were thinking of going for an early election. And so they hadn't done any of the preparations. Labour, looking at the polls, thought it was almost inevitable she was going to go for an early election. So ironically, the opposition were much better prepared for this election than the governing party, despite the fact it was the governing party who chose to call it.
And Katie, that now seems to have benefited Corbyn, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, having just come back from Labour conference, it's completely turned things around for Corbyn. He is in the most powerful position he's been. Within his party, he now has a cult-like status, but it's widespread. It's not just a small number of supporters. It's infectious, and even the moderates are now behind him. And Theresa May looks very weak, so the snap election did like exactly the opposite of what she wanted to do.
Do you think there's any chance that Labour are perhaps a little bit cocky at the moment?
I think this is one of the risks for them is if this parliament does go to 2022, how do they keep this up for 4 years? You know, and then I think the other thing is the last manifesto was quite clever because it had lots of good kind of retail offer in it and not too much we're going to end neoliberalism in it. I think the danger is that in their confidence you get kind of John McDonnell saying, don't worry, we're preparing for the run on the pound. Paul Mason saying it's going to be like Stalingrad, and I'm not sure many of the voters want to be in the Battle of Stalingrad. So I think that is obviously a risk for them. But I think the two big problems for the Tories are, one, these divides over Brexit within the party are existential, and secondly, there's no sense of urgency. You know, where is the urgency on housing? You know, and I think the problem with the Tories is they keep diagnosing what the problems are. But then they don't set about trying to deal with them with anything like the urgency required.
Yeah, I was really struck at conference by how much, you know, the party really has become emboldened and almost drunk the Kool-Aid on Corbyn's policies. The fact that people are just calling it 21st century socialism and being very, like, brazen about it is interesting. It feels more bold than it was during the election campaign. So I think it could definitely scare some people off. I think lots of people who vote like the fact, you know, they want the public sector pay gap lifted. They're not necessarily, you know, socialists, but they want a slightly fairer thing. So they do risk isolating people. But like James says, if Brexit means that people think there's a run on the pound anyway, they might think, why not take a chance on Corbyn's vision?
The one thing I don't get about 21st century socialism is how it's different from late 20th century socialism. It seems to involve an iPad, and that's about the only difference at all.
It involves a chant before the speeches. Ideally, oh, Jeremy Corbyn. I think that's one of the differentiating factors.
A few more hashtags.
You've got to be in the hall to believe it.
Just finally, obviously, Damian Green has given an interview to The Spectator in which he says that Theresa May will continue fighting. James, you interviewed him. What should we make of that?
I was taken aback because up until this interview, I had always thought that this idea that Theresa May would fight the next election was something that people said in a kind of pro forma way, not because they really believed it. What was striking about Damian Green was, A, he did seem convinced that she could win the public and the party round. And secondly, that the thinking is developed enough for him to have a kind of electoral strategy that, you know, because the Lib Dems will get more of the vote, that means the Tories will do better because, you know, Corbyn won't have this wholly united left behind him and all this stuff. And I did leave that interview thinking, crikey, they really do think that she can lead the party into the next election. I think this is very dangerous for them because the kind of peace that has broken out in the Tory party was based on this idea. Everyone came back from the summer and kind of accepted that she would do Brexit and then go. If the impression is being given that she won't go even when Brexit is done, then I think there is a chance that people think, actually, we need to move against her. I think it is quite a dangerous game.
But do you think that, I mean, he's her deputy prime minister. Do you think he would have actually said, no, she's going to...
No, I think there's a difference between pro forma saying, yes, she's going to fight it, and then setting out the electoral strategy that would underpin it. It's obviously more serious if you've thought through how you would fight the election with her as leader.
Yeah, no, it's obviously good news for Damian Green if Theresa May does stay leader, because he's seen his career really improve under her, so there might be an ulterior motive.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Katie. And just a reminder that you can subscribe to this podcast on the iTunes store. It's called Coffee House Shots. Just a reminder that we've got a special subscription offer to The Spectator. If you get 12 issues for just £12, which includes full access to all of our website and apps, it now also comes with a Moleskine notebook worth £20. To get this, just go to spectator.co.uk/podoffer.